Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCellaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, February 5th, 2012, and this is show number 351. Well, I'm glad to see that the usual characters in the live show have shown up in spite of the fact that it's the middle of the Super Bowl. I guess Madonna's on right now doing the halftime show, so maybe that's why we got a good crowd. Anyway, this weekend I had a blast doing a recording with Dr. Robert Carter of the Tech Doctor podcast. If you haven't heard this show before, it's a fascinating insight into the use of technology by the blind. Robert was kind enough to have me on this particular show to talk about Blindfolded and the process I went through to learn voiceover on the Mac and iPhone. We had a blast comparing notes and talking about how terrifying it was, but how really enjoyable it was to learn a new skill. The show won't be up for a couple of days, but go check it out at dr-carter.com or subscribe to it in iTunes by looking for the Tech Doctor blog and podcast, or of course, there's a link in the show notes. Well, on this week's show, we have a couple of tech reviews, a story about Sony and bias, and how much I love DRM, plus several more interviews from Macworld. We also have Sarah Lane from the Twit Network on Chit Chat Across the Pond. The interviews from Macworld and Chit Chat Across the Pond with Sarah are all available on video at podfeet.com, so if you'd rather watch those instead of listen, you might want to head over to podfeet.com and watch the videos when I get to that part of the show. We tried to make sure that the audio would make sense without being able to see the video, but if you have the time, the videos often show off the products that are being demonstrated. Steve has done a terrific job with the videos. They really look professional, and they sound great, too. Well, I sure hope you have some time on your hands because this show is going to be a really long one. We'd better get started. Well, have I ever mentioned to you how much I just love digital rights management? Yeah, it's pretty much one of my favorite things. Remember how happy I was when I couldn't play Up on my iPad to a projector because I paid for the movie instead of stealing it? Well, I've got a new one. For Christmas, we got Steve a copy of District 9. If you haven't seen it, it's a rather gruesome movie with kind of a creepy plot. We love that kind of thing. Now, we also enjoy the quality of a good Blu-ray, but we also like to put our movies on a hard drive for toting around on vacation or putting on an iPad. So, of course, we bought the Blu-ray version of District 9 with a digital copy included. Instead of a nice little download, they give you a real DVD, but it's got copy protection on it, which can only be unlocked with a secret code. By some dumb luck, I did not accidentally throw away the paper inside the DVD case, which normally I just throw all that junk away that comes in there, but luckily I did save it. And that's lucky because that's where the secret code was embossed. Lucky me, right? So I typed in the code, and it did not work. I typed it in again, and it did not work. I fiddled around for a while, and then I started reading the fine print. You guys are going to love this. The code expired in December of 2010. Seriously, they sold us a digital copy in December of 2011 that expired a year earlier. Okay, so at this point, I'm getting pretty cranky. The next day, I called the company that made the DVD. Oh, I seem to have forgotten to tell you who caused me this grief. It was, of course, Sony. I called customer service and I explained the problem. The first woman did not know what a digital copy was. Please give me someone new. The second woman seemed to have heard of DVDs, but wasn't quite sure what this had to do with Blu-ray. I patiently explained it again. I'm not sure if I got a third person in there, but somewhere along the line, someone got the brilliant idea that maybe I should be talking to the Blu-ray people. Wow, what a concept. So they finally foisted me over there, and this guy answers the phone. I explained again what the problem was, and you're going to love his answer. After 17 minutes on the phone trying to get through to this guy, he tells me that their computers are down. I couldn't believe it. I suggested, you know, why don't you send me off to another call center where maybe their computers are actually running? He explained to a rather irritated and impatient Allison that there is no other call center that knows what a Blu-ray is. I don't remember exactly what I said, but I'm pretty sure it might have been some non-Girl Scout safe words at that point, or possibly, are you kidding me? He suggested I wait 10 minutes and call back. Well, I didn't call back. Instead, I wrote to customer service and described that entire experience. This is when it gets really good. Now, remember the plot here. I bought District 9. A bloody, violent, gruesome movie. Here's what Sony wrote back to me. I am not making this up. Dear Allison, we apologize for the inconvenience and difficulties you experienced with the title District 9. Bonus digital copies are available for 1 year after the movie has been released to stores. Unfortunately, District 9 was released over a year ago, and the digital copy is no longer available. On the back of the cover, the system requirements are listed for the download. There is a sentence that includes when the digital copy must be redeemed by. Okay, my interlude here. It is not on the outside of the cover. It's on the inside of the DVD, but it doesn't make any sense anyway. Okay, back to the Sony rep. Due to your poor experience with Sony customer service, we would like to provide you a complimentary ultraviolet redemption code of your choice from our active ultraviolet title listing in appreciation of your patience. Please respond to this email or call us, blah, 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 with one of the following titles. We will be happy to send you a code. Okay, you ready for the list of movies they suggested? The first movie they offered me is The Smurfs. Seriously, I am not making this up. My little friend Brian Valentine ended his letter with, "We appreciate your interest in Sony Home Pictures Entertainment products." Okay, seriously, let's talk about an appropriate response to this. How about, "What are you, some kind of moron?" But no, I took the high road. I explained quite carefully that I bought District 9. I paid his company for District 9. It says right on the packaging that it includes a digital copy. It has a separate DVD inside the case that says digital copy on it. But you're saying that you won't let me have it? I went on to explain that the Smurfs was not exactly an appropriate replacement for that product. I included also that companies like Sony are fighting tooth and nail to stop piracy, lobbying Congress to pass draconian laws to keep us from pirating. Do you not see the absolute irony of what you're doing here? Please clarify your position for me. Is it true that the only way I can get the movie you sold me is for me to pirate it? Well, I sent that email off, but the next day I got an even better idea. I wrote another email explaining that selling me District 9 but giving me the Smurfs violates the California Business and Professions Code Section 17500, otherwise known as the Bait and Switch Law. I highlighted the relevant sections of the code in case he had trouble reading it. So in the words of Ken Ray, so there's that. Well, like I said earlier, Chit Chat Across the Pond features Sarah Lane from Twit.tv. By the way, if you don't know who she is, she's the host of Tech News Today, iPad Today, The Social Hour, and more. Steve and I did this interview during Macworld iWorld in one of the special rooms they had set up in the press room. We hadn't really expected or practiced exactly how we do the microphone. Would I pass it back and forth like I do in the show floor? Well, we thought that might look kind of dorky for, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes kind of an interview. Instead, we put it down on the table between Sarah and me, and that seemed really smart at the time. But not so smart, because this mic likes you to talk right into the top of it, and we were now both perpendicular to it. The result was that the audio levels were pretty low, and when Steve boosted the audio up, the noise on it was pretty bad. Well, I asked him to give me the audio because I knew that I had Bias Inc. Sound Soap, which lets you sample some audio to find the noise, and that lets you remove that noise, and has some easy adjustments, some little dials to make it better. I bought Sound Soap at the first or second podcast expo. I was standing at the table there at the Bias booth, and I met the inimitable Donald Burr. He was looking to buy it as well. Well, I got to tell you, over the years, I've gotten a lot more out of meeting Donald than I ever did with Sound Soap because I didn't need it all that often. But when I need it, I need it. So this weekend, I really, really needed it because I needed that interview ready for today. I realized that I hadn't installed it on my new Mac, so I downloaded the installer, ran it, and jumped over to LastPass to get my license key. And the license key didn't work. It said I had exceeded the number of authorizations. Well, that's probably because I don't remember ever uninstalling it on my old Mac before I reformatted it to give it to Kyle, so I was dead in the water. On Friday night, I sent Bias Support an email, and I waited overnight, sent them another email on Saturday morning. I put a desperate tweet out to them at noon on Saturday. No answer. Well, I guess I've gotten used to instant gratification with other software vendors these days, but I was running out of time. Steve was editing the video, and I needed the audio for this week's Chit Chat Across the Pond. So I went on a hunt, starting in the Mac App Store for a sound editor that would remove noise, but I found nothing of use there. And I went on to just search the web, and I came across something interesting. It's called WavePad Audio Editing Software from NCH Software. They have a free download that is available for non-commercial use only, and it doesn't put any janky stuff on your audio or anything like that. This free version does not expire and includes most of the features of the normal version. I downloaded the application, brought in my audio file, did a search in the menus, found a button that said noise reduction. I pushed that button and the noise was gone. I mean, it was reduced by like 90% in just a few seconds. First of all, this was way easier than the way BIAS works. And second of all, or BIAS's sound soap works, I should say. And second of all, they let me find out if it would fix my problem for free. Well, I fooled around a bit more and I discovered that I could also amplify the sound with a simple slider from 1x to 4x. As it turned out, the audio was still quite a bit too quiet, so after removing the noise, I amped it up about 300% and now it is quite listenable. Now that's the way to sell software. Since technically I do make a little bit of money off the No Silicast, I figured that counted as commercial use, even though I could have cheated them out of the price of the software because they did not put annoying DRM in place. So I headed on over to NCH Software at nch.com.au and I bought WavePad's audio editor. It was $50 because they have a 30% off sale going on right now. It's normally $70. If you're interested in giving it a try, check it out soon because that 30% off sale ends on February 15th. They have a whole lot of other audio and video editing software. They've got CD, DVD, and Blu-ray burning software. I bet I could find a lot to play with here. So, no DRM for the win. I've been telling you guys about Clarify from BlueMangoLearning.com ever since it was in beta. But this week, Macworld selected Clarify to give it the coveted title of Mac Gem. They did a great review and sort of a tutorial, actually, on how to use it over at MacWorld.com, and I put a link directly to the story in the show notes. I liked the review because they clearly explained how Clarify is not a screenshot utility. That's something that's often hard to get across to people. Here's what they wrote. If you just need to show someone exactly what you mean when referring to something on screen, you could likely get by with a free program such as Sketch. But for more complex annotations, or if you'd like to be able to quickly put together clear how-tos, Clarify is a standout program. Compared to creating the same types of images and documents in Word, Pages, or TextEdit, Clarify is dramatically easier and faster, and it produces better-looking results. How is that? I love it. That was so cool to read what they wrote. If you haven't tried out Clarify, head on over to BlueMangoLearning.com/Clarify and download the free trial for Mac or Windows. If you want to buy it for all your Macs, simply click on the click to buy Clarify link in the left sidebar over on podfeet.com, right underneath the Screen Steps logo.
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Hello, Allison. This is Professor Albert with a really dumb question. I just recently got a Mac Mini with the i7 chip, and I loved it. It works so wonderful and fast. What a machine. Oh, my God. Now, I have a closet that I turn into an office, for we have a very little cottage here in Frankfurt. The other day, I come home and our St. Bernard was staring at my office closet door and whining. I opened the closet door and oh my God, it was like opening up a sauna. It was so crazy hot. So I reached down and touched my Mac Mini, for the fan was blowing and it was so crazy. My Mac Mini was so hot, I could fry an egg on it. I could actually make an egg McMuffin. Ha ha! We love the jokes. But back to my dumb question. I checked the iStat menu's temperature gauge, and the temperature of my Mac Mini was 196 degrees. That is crazy, yeah? So I returned my Mac Mini for fear it would burn down my house. So here's my dumb question, Allison Sheridan, the very best podcast in the world. How hot is bed for a Mac computer, dear? Help me out, Allison. You are so smart.
Well, Professor, this is a question I've heard a lot, but I never was the one being asked, so I didn't pay that much attention. At first, I thought you had asked a hard question, but in reality, if I answer just that little piece you asked, it's actually pretty easy to answer. I found the actual Mac Mini guide from Apple for the 2011 model, and on page 68, it says that the operating temperature range is 50 to 95 degrees. So at the very least, we know that keeping a Mac Mini in a sauna is probably a really bad idea. I'm pretty sure it must have been close to that 95-degree mark. Now, the real question to ask is why it was running so hot. You mentioned having it in a closet. I wonder if there was sufficient ventilation. Or perhaps you had it on a blanket to keep it warm? Another possibility is that there were some applications hammering away. Did you have it rendering videos 24/7? Maybe executing some complex fast Fourier transforms? Calculating folding of proteins? I would have checked iStat menus in the processors tab to find out what was powering those processors so hard to get it to heat up that much. Or maybe it was a defective unit, which is probably more likely the case. I hope you got a picture of frying an egg on it at the very least.
Hi, Allison. This is Switcher Mark, and I'd like to share a short iOS app review that is not a Macworld review, but a review of an app that I learned about because of Macworld. The app is the Azul Media Player for iPad by Gplex. Here's the story on how I discovered this app. I decided to borrow my wife's iPad to take to Macworld. No, I don't have my own yet. My problem was that I wanted to load some video files, episodes of a TV show I've copied from DVD, from my computer onto the iPad. Of course, the easiest way to do this is to sync the iPad to iTunes. The problem is that my wife's iPad is not synced with my iTunes account. And if I did a sync, I risked messing up a lot of other files on her iPad. And after 28 years of marriage, I've learned that wouldn't be a very good idea. I needed to find a safer alternative. After a quick Google search, I learned about Azul. Very simply, it's a media player and downloader. The app is $1.99 for iPad and 99 cents for iPhone. I use the iPad app. The process is really easy. I started with files on my computer that had been copied from a DVD using Handbrake. To get them onto the iPad, I just connected the iPad to the computer and opened iTunes, but I did not let iTunes sync with the iPad. After your iPad is connected, you should see it in iTunes on the left under Devices. Select the device and then select the Apps tab. When you scroll to the bottom of the Apps tab, you'll see a section dedicated to file sharing. On the left, you see all of the apps that are on your device that can transfer documents between the computer and the device. Azul should show up in this list of apps. Just highlight Azul, and now the box on the right will be labeled Azul Documents. And on the lower right, there's an Add button. Click on the Add button, navigate to the location on your computer where the video files are located, select them, and add them. iTunes will give you a progress bar so you know when you're done copying the files. That's it. Now, when you open Azul on the iPad, it'll open to a library of all the video files you've placed in its Documents folder. The files show up as a thumbnail image and a title. When I tried this, it worked without a hitch. The files transferred easily and quickly, and they played perfectly well in the Azul app on the iPad. For me, the purpose of the app was to get video files on the iPad without doing an iTunes sync. But the app has two other big functions that may be more important to other people. First, the app can play many types of video files that iTunes and the native iPad app simply won't support. The list is too long to share, but it includes AVI, MOV, DivX, WMV, and many, many more. The app also supports AirPlay on iPad, so you can show the videos on a TV with Apple TV too. Perhaps an even bigger feature is the ability to download files from the internet directly into the app without ever connecting to a computer. The app advertises the ability to download and play videos from online sources like YouTube or other file sharing sites. I haven't tried this capability because I don't use file sharing sites, so I can't review it, but the capability is there and other braver castaways may want to give this a try. I did, however, test the app by downloading a video file I placed in my Box.com account. From within Azul, I used the in-app browser to log into my Box.com account, locate a test file, and then immediately download the file into the app. You're also given the option to attempt to stream the video file from within the app. In my test, this function worked well. I could really see the usefulness of this feature if you store your video files on a server. As long as you have internet access to the files, the Azul app can play them. For my purposes of simply moving video files onto the iPad to watch on the plane without syncing to iTunes, the app worked like a charm, and I would absolutely recommend it. The many other features of the app seem like great bonuses. Again, it's Azul by Gplex, and it's $1.99 in the App Store. It was great to see you and Steve and all the other castaways at Macworld this year. I can't wait to do it again next year.
Well, Mark, this is a fantastic recommendation. I love this idea. I might actually go grab Azul right now, just in case for later, because it's on sale right now for only 99 cents. I am sure I'm going to need this eventually. They also have an iPhone app, so if you need that one, I've got a link in the show notes to that as well. It was definitely one of the high points of the show for Steve and I to get to hang out with you, too. I love your dry sense of humor and how you give me a hard time, much to Steve's delight. And congratulations on having your photo featured by IDG in the Digital Art Gallery. I put a link in the show notes to it. That was really cool. Felt like we were hanging with a celebrity. Well, let's go ahead and start working through some more Macworld reviews. And like I said, these are also available in video, so right now would be the right time to stop and go back over to podfeed.com and watch the videos if you like. Or if you prefer the audio, just listen up. Well, I'm a big fan of Blue Microphones gear. I use the Blue Icicle as my XLR to USB interface for my Heil PR20 microphone. Lets me take a, you know, fairly high-end mic and plug it into a Mac, completely bypassing the whole concept of using a mixer and all that complexity. I think the audio sounds just fine. I really enjoy talking to the Blue Microphone people at Macworld about the new version of the Blue Mikey that will work with the iPhone 4 and their USB mic that they just are about to come out with called the Tiki. We're in the Blue Microphone booth with Ben Tompkins, and I walked up and said, I have a Blue Icicle and I love it.
We love to hear that too.
So you've got a couple of new products. A lot of people are fond of Blue products. You've got a whole bunch of them here, but you got a couple of new things you've just come out with.
Absolutely. The first of which is our Mikey Digital. Now, we've had two prior versions of the Mikey that a lot of people are aware of, but none of them worked on the iPhone 4. It's a digital connector that Apple came out with. It's on the iPad as well as the iPhone 4 and the new iPod Touches. So here it is, Mikey Digital. Connected, it totally works. We've got three different gain settings. An auto gain setting, which is brand new. And if you're in a quiet environment where you want to pick it up more, the first setting, and then the third setting, that'll pick up a loud environment. And another new feature is you can now plug a guitar into it, a lapel mic, or anything like that.
So I'm going to describe it a little bit because we're audio also in the podcast. So it's a maybe about a third the size of the iPhone, and it plugs into the 30-pin dock connector, right?
Correct.
And it's flexible, so you can do it at different angles.
270 degrees.
Now that's flexible. All right, tell us about the Tiki. This is a little tiny thing.
So this is a brand new mic that we're really proud of. It's a USB mic. It's going to retail for $59. Now what's cool about the Tiki is that it's got intelligent voice technology. What that basically is it can recognize the difference between human voice and things like air conditioning, water running in the background, a dog barking, and it'll block that out. There's actually a capsule on both sides, and that'll cancel out depending on which side you're putting the USB mic on, because sometimes, you know, there's a USB on the right side of your laptop, sometimes it's on the left.
So what I'm looking at looks like a giant thumb drive with a bend in it, with a silver cylinder kind of resting in that. What's with the design? Just cool looking?
So the design of it, it's, as I take it out of the package here, so the capsule's on both sides of it. So if I plug it on this side of the laptop, let's say I'm walking around the room too, it really pinpoints where you're at using both sides or canceling out either side.
Wow, that is really cool. So how much is the Tiki?
$59. Okay. And it's also got a mode on it to where we're going to have a button on the side that you can take it out of that intelligent muting or a sort of natural intelligent speech technology.
One of the things I like that he described before we got on the air here was that somebody's typing in the background, maybe it's you, and it'll stop transmitting that over to the Skype guy who thinks you're paying complete and utter attention to every word he says.
Correct. I'm just as guilty as anybody of, you know, when we're on a conference call, I start typing and they go, who's typing in the background? Tiki's going to take care of that. It's going to put it into a mute, and actually this right here will glow from blue to orange.
That is so cool. And how much is the new Blue Mikey?
$99.
Very cool. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think one of the coolest, most inventive things I saw at Macworld, just something I would have never thought of doing, was a company called Heat Maps, and they help you figure out how people are actually using your application. Let's have a listen to what they have to say. I'm in the Heat Maps booth with Cyprian, the CEO, and he's going to show us something that looks pretty doggone cool.
Yes, I will show you today how the heat maps works in iOS applications. It's basically a software for developers who create great applications for iPhone and iPad to see how their users interact with it. You know, it's a software to find little twitches or problems in the applications. People wanted to zoom in on a text, but you know, developers didn't do zoom, or people want to scroll down on a interface that doesn't support scrolling. And sometimes
that sounds really cool, because that, how do you get that, normally get that information, right? You just got to watch people.
Yeah, you got to watch. And what we did is we created a software that you ship to the App Store, and I mean, thousands of people can use it, and you get data from real people, and you get a lot of interesting, cool stuff, like finding out if they like to use their software in the portrait mode or vertical mode, because some people just prefer using a bigger screen, you know? And
so I'm a little confused. So let's say I sell Allison's great app to the App Store. I also put a copy of this in the App Store to go with it, like a tandem app?
Absolutely. This is it's a static library. You just drag and drop it into your framework, into your application. As a developer, that's what you do.
Oh, you ship it as part of the product?
Yes, you do. Yeah, Apple approves that because it sends anonymous data to our servers. And we aggregate the data and we let you see it inside your application. Nowhere on the website, inside your application. Looking, let me show you a demo. Well, it's a really funny application.
Let's turn this way.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm just going to shake this this app and our menu comes out and I have a choice of viewing all touches or single touch. This is one of our clients' application.
Yeah, did you have to pick that app?
Let's see.
That's okay, keep going.
So, let's see. This is the place where they want to touch. They don't want to log in, they don't want to register, they just want to go somewhere else. Let's see what gestures they do. Well, let's see the gestures. They don't really rotate too much. They don't zoom in.
And this is also audio, so I'm going to tell a little bit about this. It shows clockwise only four people, counterclockwise eight, but pinching and zooming appears to be big.
Yeah, more of swiping. I mean, people want to swipe even though it doesn't support swiping.
Oh, so interesting. 59% of the people tried to go down and it doesn't.
Yeah, that's correct. So I always laugh at this because when Google first introduced their website, people were also scrolling because there was just one little box.
There's got to be something more.
Absolutely. So they find out that they need to put the, you know, Google copyright on the bottom to make them stop scrolling. So it's interesting that we don't think about those little things, but users, if you don't tell them, they will, you know,
try to do things. Yeah.
And for you as a developer, it's a good idea to see how people interact in their original environment, at home, at work.
Right, right. And you can make it be more natural. Absolutely. If the button was in the upper right, but everybody's touching the lower left to get to it, it wouldn't work.
And sometimes, you know, the buttons are small and people get frustrated. Not everybody has a good eyes. Depending on what's your target, right? If you have older people as a target, you may need to get the feedback to make the application larger because they would want it to be. And this software will let you see that.
That is really cool. So how do you price this?
Okay, it's free for one screen of the application because, you know, we want to give the people ability to see it. And if they like it, they can buy it another screen for $10.
So what does a screen and another screen mean?
Okay, well, this is one screen, right? And for instance, if I go to settings, that could be another screen. If I go to...
I see what you mean. A screen within the application.
Yeah, within the application,
okay.
Yeah.
So you said it was free for the first screen, but how much?
$10. $10 for another screen.
And so if you had 10 screens, it'd be $100?
Yeah, but it would be cheaper because we give discounts. More you buy, less you pay. So it would be probably around $80.
That is absolutely fascinating. This is really a new thing. I haven't ever seen anything like this.
It is a new thing. We've spent about a year working on it, making it better, overcoming problems, because generating heat map is a very long process, but we do it with a powerful service, and we just send you the results, so you don't have to wait, and you get it always the fresh, real-time data.
That is fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Cyprian. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Now, I've been a longtime fan of Rogue Amoeba. I love these guys. They're the makers of Piezo that I've talked to you about before, but you're going to learn more about it from the representative there. And they also make Audio Hijack Pro and even some products that I had never actually heard of. So let's listen into this one.
I'm in the Rogue Amoeba booth, one of my favorite companies. Love Rogue Amoeba. And I've cornered Paul Kafasis. There, I got it. We had drinks the other night and started talking, and I realized there's actually some applications you sell that I don't yet use. But I think we wanted to start talking about Piezo.
Yeah, so Piezo is our new application. It's an application for recording audio. We have a powerful application called Audio Hijack Pro that a lot of people know.
I love Audio Hijack Pro.
Excellent. But it's a little complex. It's not the easiest thing in the world to use. And it's very powerful. But it's something where we needed to make a simpler version that a whole lot of people could use. It would be a lot more accessible for the average person. And that's what Piezo is.
Yeah, the simplicity is probably the single number one best thing. But even though I think I'm fairly high end in this technology, and I love Audio Hijack Pro, I'm using Piezo now to record Skype calls.
Yeah, absolutely. With Audio Hijack Pro, you've been able to record Skype for years, but with Piezo, it's pretty much one click. You set Skype as the source, and you click, and Piezo splits the audio. It grabs both parties. It grabs your audio, and it grabs the other party, and it splits it to the left and right channel and saves an audio file for you with almost no effort.
Yeah, it is really easy. I do find it real weird, though, when I'm listening to Bart and me talk after I've recorded it, and it's like, Bart's on my left ear, I'm on my right ear, back, forth. It's kind of creepy.
Well, it's pretty useful for most people in terms of editing the audio after the fact. It's very easy to isolate the tracks that way. So
how do you pull the tracks apart after the fact? You got to use some other tools, right?
Right, so you need some sort of audio editor. If you're looking to do multi-track editing, you'll look for a multi-track editor. We have a very simple editor called Fission, which I think you're familiar with.
I've heard of it, but I haven't actually used it yet. I think we need to talk about that later.
All right, so Fission is just a basic audio editor that works with MP3 and AAC files losslessly. So it lets you trim and do basic audio editing operations. So for basic editing of piezo recordings, that works pretty well. But if you're looking for something a little more complicated or a little more powerful, rather, multi-track editor is what you're going to want for that. Yeah,
so I hadn't actually seen how to do that, like with GarageBand.
GarageBand is able to do it. There's a few others that are out there, but...
So I don't know how to split the tracks apart, because they come in on the same track, but left and right stereo.
So with that, you'd probably just duplicate the tracks, and you could just isolate one and then do the editing on that, and then isolate the other one and do the editing on that.
Oh, that'd be easy.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want to... So this won't be very interesting for the audio audience, but just show people what the interface looks like on Piezo.
Yeah, so this is Piezo right here, and it looks... Basically, it's what we call a retro-modern design, and the idea was just to have some retro features like the VU meters right here, but it's got a little bit of wood, it's got a little bit of personality to it. We spent a lot of time just sort of figuring out how we wanted it to look, and we're pretty happy with how it came out.
Yeah, I think one of the things that your tools stand apart is even though some of them are complicated, they're logical. You know, you can see things like, when I first saw the VU meters, I actually thought they were a gimmick because they were both moving. But then when I started recording Bart and Skype,
right,
I realized, hey, they're really doing their job. They're not just for play.
Absolutely, yeah. And in Skype, the left one is for your audio and the right one is for the other party's audio. So it's definitely there. They're not super precise, but they will tell you, you know, he's way too quiet, he's way too loud, or, you know, he's about where he should be.
Yeah, right. So, okay, now we're going to go in here. Show us how you record.
We're going to record piezo right here?
Yeah, do it.
All right, so it's recording from the mic right now. We've got our source set to the microphone. We can select an application, but we'll do the microphone right now. And this is, it's very complicated. We're going to click this button here, and now it's recording. So we're done. When we're done recording, we'll hit it one more time. And now it's stopped recording. We can view our file by clicking this little guy right here. We've got about 20 recordings from the day today, all of them useless, I'm sure. But it's really that simple. It's really just a couple clicks.
There is actually one more menu, the gear menu, right?
Yep. So there's we've got some settings right here, some basic settings. You can have a title for your file. You can have a comment in there. And then you can adjust the audio quality if you want. So if you're just doing spoken word, you can save a little bit of disk space, or you can do a little bit higher quality for music.
You know, my first instinct was okay, I want a whole bunch of options. I want to be able to blah, 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 blah. And I went, no, that's not what this is about.
That's right. That's really what Audio Hijack Pro is for. If you need more options, if you need more functionality, you can get it there. But if you want very simple recording, Piezo is the way to do it.
And what's the price on Piezo?
It's just $10.
Gotta love it. And that's in the Mac App Store?
It's in the Mac App Store, and it's sold direct as well. But you can get it trial right from our site, and then you can buy it either way.
Now, are you predicting any problems with sandboxing in the Mac App Store with being able to capture application audio?
It's actually a really good question. We've gotten that from a lot of people. We've actually tested it, and it works with sandbox applications at this time. So when in about a month or probably about 2 months, when more sandbox applications start to come out, should be fine. Shouldn't even need an update.
Sweet. Gotta love it. Okay, let's see. We wanted to talk about airfoil too, right?
Sure. That's actually what we're demoing here at the show mostly. Airfoil is a tool for sending audio from your Mac out to any device. So audio devices like the AirPort Express, the Apple TV, other Macs and PCs, as well as iPhones, iPod, Touches, and iPads. So this is Airfoil right here. We're sending audio from a music service called Spotify, which a lot of people know. We're picking the audio up right from there. We're sending it out to an AirPort Express, to an Apple TV, to a MacBook Air that's running our Airfoil speakers application.
And did you just say you could also send it like to an iPad?
Yep, absolutely. So anything that's playing on your computer, you can send to an iPad, an iPod, iPod Touch, or an iPhone on your wireless network.
That is really, really cool. So it just uses your Wi-Fi network?
Right. It sends audio right over the Wi-Fi network, and it finds the devices automatically, picks them up, and you can choose to send to them and get your audio right on those devices.
But the interface looks so simple.
That's sort of the idea. It should be simple, and it's just, again, a couple clicks to get the audio out there.
All right. And how much does Airfoil cost?
Airfoil is $25.
$25. All right. Well, thank you very much, and I hope you guys keep up with the great work. There's just a few vendors. You're just like, okay, whatever they come out with next, I need to just go get that because I'm sure it's great.
Excellent. Well, glad to hear it.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
It's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. This week, it's not across the pond, well, unless you count maybe the San Francisco Bay. I'm here with Sarah Lane from Twit, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How exciting. This is way fun. I really appreciate you
taking
the time.
I'm excited, too.
Out. Yeah.
Happy to. Well, we're both at Macworld, so why not?
Yeah, right. How fun to finally get to meet you. So the reason I want to have you on the show is I'm really interested in trying to figure out where geek girls come from, because I don't find
any
young geek
girls. Well, when two people love each other very much. No.
So I know a lot of young geek boys that write scripts for me. I mean, these guys are just crazy smart, and they're all into it, you know, and they do all the stuff, and they're very visible in the podcasting community. But I don't know any young geek girls. I know lots of geek adult girls, and I don't know where we come from if there aren't any young ones. So I thought it'd be fun to just kind of talk about your background and how you got into this. And so how old were you when you knew you were a geek?
Well, if there was a word called geek, I never heard about it until I started watching John Hughes movies where, you know, the one who didn't have any friends, that character was the geek, and that was like a bad thing. And
right.
You hoped that character would stop being a geek so that then he or she would have friends and be prettier.
Socially acceptable.
Yeah, and get to go to the dance and stuff like that. So I certainly grew up knowing that geek wasn't necessarily a bad thing to be, but would be perceived badly by people who are supposed to matter. And at a young age, that all that peer pressure stuff is really important
matters,
to kids.
Right.
Certainly was to me. So I think, my parents would probably tell you, before I ever really realized that not all kids were doing this, is I was really obsessed with recording machines, microphones, tape recorders, you know, playing something and then rewinding it and listening to it back, playing it on double speed. I just really liked the idea of recording things.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that was something that I started to, like, Dad had a, you know, some old Yamaha tape recorder, really old thing. I would say, you know, probably about late 70s when I was just a tot. I wanted to do that. That's what I wanted to do for fun. You know, when Sesame Street was over, I wanted to play tape recorder. And so then, and I'm an only child, and they needed to keep me occupied. And I mean, it turned into something where there would be like a, you know, a new cassette would be bought for Sarah. Look what we got, you know, and that would keep me occupied for weeks because I'd record one side and I'd record the other side and I'd listen to the first side and then I'd splice in like where I didn't think it was very good, something else on top. Then it turned into sort of like at home radio shows, really like, I mean, you want to, like, hear, like, the crazy mind of a child, all of my old cassette tapes.
Oh, did they save them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Well, I did.
Nice.
I would never throw those away because, I don't know, they're silly, but they really represent a lot of time spent and stuff that I really, really enjoyed.
It's almost like you have a diary, except it's your own voice telling the story.
Yeah, well, and pretending to be a newscaster.
Oh, okay. So you were meant to be in podcasting.
Interviewing.
Then. You were born
Ferdinand Marcos. Yeah. Well, it's funny.
Not his wife with all the shoes. It was Ferdinand you wanted to talk to.
That's right.
About.
Well, because he was politically more important, and I was a serious interviewer.
Serious news, yeah.
So I did stuff like that. So that got me really interested in, you know, stereo systems. When we'd go to the mall, I didn't really want to go shopping, but I wanted to go to the stereo floor. And in those days, you know, Macy's had a whole floor for electronics. They didn't really do that anymore.
Yeah, right.
But you just, you know, you go up to, it was usually like the top floor up by the, you know, silverware. And they would just leave me in the electronics area, you know, and I'd look around and press buttons. And I just really liked all of that. I liked knowing how it worked. I liked comparing systems to see if, you know, there was a system that was more expensive. What was the cool thing that I wasn't getting, you know, on the Sanyo version of the Sony. Yeah. And that was something that I realized, you know, none of my girlfriends really like any of this stuff. They kind of like that I liked it, though.
Oh.
You know, they'd come over to the house and be like, ooh, Sarah's got this stereo stuff. Or a microphone, you know, where you can hold it like a, you know, like an adult. But I knew that that was something that I was interested in that girls my age weren't interested in. Now, boys my age were more.
So did that, as you got older, as you got into high school, did you try to hide that side of yourself?
No, then it got cool.
Oh.
Because then you could, you know.
So you grew up in a better era than me.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, because then it turned into, like, I was the first person to secretly record telephone conversations that then could be used as blackmail. When the guy said, I never said that, I'd say, no, you did, and I have you on tape. Totally unethical, but, you know, it was like, I think that I was sort of starting to, I became someone where people would come to me and say, how do I do this? And I really liked, because I was a know-it-all, and I still am, I really liked having that answer, being able to tinker and sort of figure out a solution.
Hmm.
You know, if you don't know how the VCR works, I will program it for you, no problem. I don't care what the interface looks like, I can do it. Just give me 5 seconds. Stay back. So now, that
did you like the hardware side or mostly the software side? I mean, the soft side of it. Like, do you like installing it or do you like the programming of it? That sort of that side of it.
I would say, as a kid, hardware was more interesting to me.
Oh, interesting.
It was more fun.
Okay.
I have since become much more of a software person, and I think that has to do a little bit more with just lack of tinkering time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people just love for troubleshooting on hardware, and
the hardware side to me is almost, for some reason, terrifies me. So
yeah.
I loaded, you know, 3 apps on my BlackBerry on an off ramp once. I mean, that's how much I'll just throw stuff on and see what happens. And, ooh, cool, that's interesting. That broke, you know.
Right.
But the idea of pulling a hard drive just gives me cold chills. I'll do it.
Yeah.
And actually, many years ago, after watching Patrick Norton with Leo, I decided to build my own PC. And I was, you know, really geared up. I took a week off of work to do it, you know, because and I was really bummed. I was done in like 4 hours. I was like, well, now what am I supposed to do? That
right.
was too easy.
Yeah.
And that helped a little bit, but I don't find myself.
Well, you're just good at it, I guess.
Yeah, there's that.
Well, it took a week.
It took me an extra half a day because I didn't seat the Wi-Fi card properly. But,
yeah.
You know, that was all I had to do. But I found that it seems like girls tend more towards the software side of things than the hardware things. I'm a mechanical engineer, and that's still really, really rare.
Right.
And I probably shouldn't be terrified of hardware and a mechanical engineer at the same time. But there,
well, you know, I will say, you know, as far as hardware goes, I hate cars. I mean, I don't hate them because I like to get from point A to point B, but, you know, you open up the hood of a car, and I'm just like, I can't get out of here fast enough. You know, that scares me.
Right.
It's just, it's very intimidating to me. It's never been something that I've really even had an interest in getting to know a little bit more. I'm not really sure why the innards of a PC doesn't repel me the same way. But I don't know. Maybe it's because...
Maybe it's up in grease.
Maybe. Well, that doesn't help.
It's also really dangerous if you do it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, what's the worst thing if you screw your PC up? You have
right.
to fix it.
Yes. And maybe I've seen too many dramatic car explosions in Hollywood movies. I'm not sure what it is. But, yeah, I wouldn't say hardware was really my forte anymore, but it certainly was back in the day. Mm-hmm. Then again, I think at least for my interest, things were a little bit simpler. You know,
right,
I was playing
right.
with tape recorders and putting batteries in my microphone. And
yeah.
It
yeah.
was still just kind
of
the process.
I took my phone apart when I was a little girl. My dad was so excited because I took my phone apart. But, I mean, it was a bell with a hammer when I'm talking about it. You know, you take your phone apart now and you go, well, there's a circuit board, huh? Put it back together. There's nothing to
yeah.
do these days.
Right.
So let's take a turn towards the computing side of things. What was your first computer?
It was an Atari 2600.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if my mom or my dad bought it. Probably my dad. But it was weird. We had like I said, I'm an only child, so it was all about keeping me occupied. But actually, all three of us had our favorite games. There was Pac-Man, There was, it was called Breakout.
I know Breakout.
You know Breakout.
Sure, yeah.
And then, what was the third game that we played a lot of? Might have been Asteroids. But this is just the funny story. We played the crap out of this system, and at the time it was like, we were the only people that we knew who had an Atari console, and we didn't know where to put it because people didn't do things.
You didn't have it on your TV in the family room, right?
No, because it seemed weird to us. That's where you watch the news, or that's where you watch a movie or something. And I don't even know if we were watching movies then. We probably had our first Betamax right around the same time. So it was in my parents' room, like on this, crappy little, like the first TV that we had, the other TV. And now that I think about it, I'm like, can you imagine kids playing all their computer games in their parents' room? It's very unheard of. But at the time, that's in my memory, that's where I spent all this time. It's like in the corner of my parents' bedroom playing Atari. But after a certain point, we had worn out the Pac-Man game. There was too much dust in the system. I'm not really sure what had happened.
So ran it into the ground.
It still worked though. But when you fired up the game, you wanted to play instead of Ready, where it would say in the middle. Everyone knows Pac-Man Ready! Exclamation point. It
said
Gady, and it had an exclamation point before the G and after the Y.
Oh no, that's freaky.
And my dad thought, I've reached a new level. I'm that good.
I'm a Gady.
I've unlocked Pac-Man somehow. Yeah, I'm in some sort of like an alternate universe. So yeah, that was our first computer. Our first computer that was more for word processing and less just for fun was I wouldn't even remember the model number off the top of my head.
Or
no,
PC?
It was an IBM.
Oh, okay.
It was an IBM. Yeah. My mom had she was a like an executive assistant for many years, and so typing was a big deal. And at their work, when they moved from typewriters, she was trained on WordPerfect.
Right, right.
And or some whatever WordPerfect was before it was WordPerfect, and so she had a copy of that mm-hmm. she brought home. And look, he get
crazy.
His type all day. Yeah, yeah.
So my mom is legally blind, and she was just about 3 months ago. We finally shut down her 27-year-old PC running DOS, running WordPerfect 5.1.
Wow.
It was 27 years that thing ran.
Wow.
It was amazing.
That is impressive.
But I mean, once she knew that, we didn't want to try to teach her something else because it was a typewriter was all it was for. But she couldn't. It had an 2 4-megabyte partitions. It was awesome. We upgraded it from a 286 to a 386 at one point. That was a big deal.
These are numbers that it's so easy to laugh at now, but at the time, that was so much.
And for an awful long time, it did the job it was invented to do. But she'd call me up and say, well, so, Allison, I need to double space. How do I do that in WordPerfect? I'm like, I'm not going to know this. But I found it online, and I had to make up a song for her to remember it. Because it was like, comma, 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 F8, F8, F7, comma, comma, F8. It's like all these weird keystrokes and everything.
Oh, my gosh.
So to help her remember it, because she couldn't write it down and see it. So she had to be able to memorize the keystrokes.
That's awesome.
It was funny.
I do that too. Sometimes I try to remember things in song because you just remember things like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I can imagine that if you have a vision impairment, that really comes in handy.
I would think so. I don't know how they remember all that stuff. So do you ever talk to young girls about tech or geekness or being that it's cool or anything like that? I mean, because as a really beautiful woman, I forgot to do the suck up to you at the beginning part. Yes, yes, no.
Thank you.
As a beautiful woman,
you
had to have been, it's a little more. It's got to have been really different. The traditional vision of the geek girl is one of the girls on Big Bang Theory, right? That sort of thing. But did that stand in your way or anything? Or was it just, you said it was cool.
Well, I thought it was cool. I guess...
Poor delusional Sarah.
Right. I actually sometimes will listen to some of my peers, men or women, who will say, real geeks know that high school is awful. And it gets better type of conversations.
We all hoped it at least.
I hear that a lot from my peers. And I don't really know how I got lucky enough to say that I never felt like my interests were stupid or looked down upon ever. And yeah, I was also just kind of a social kid, and I did a lot of extracurricular stuff. And
so maybe you were balanced.
Yeah.
So not as the traditional geek where it's all about Dungeons and Dragons or something like that, right?
No, I definitely had a lot of different interests. I mean, I wasn't just doing my little radio shows by myself 24 hours a day, but it was something that was fun for me. I felt like it set me apart from a lot of my female classmates. You know, it's sort of like sometimes being the girl that's good at math. I mean, lots of girls can be good at math, but some don't apply themselves because they don't think they're going to be good or not supposed to be. They don't believe in themselves.
Yeah.
And I always thought, it's awesome. I mean, you call on me and I know the answer. Like, that makes me feel great about myself. Yeah. And I never thought of that as, I don't know, a negative thing. Like, I was supposed to be better at soccer, that sort of thing. So when I hear people say, well, you know, you're a real geek when you can talk about how awful, you know, your childhood was or how hard it was to make friends.
Like, I had a good time.
I feel for that person because it would suck to spend a lot of time wondering if there were other people like you.
Worrying like that. You know, you bring up not applying yourself in math as young girls. I had my daughter was in second grade and had a sleepover with a friend, and I overheard the girl go, "Oh, I'm bad at math. I hate math. I heard about algebra. I'm going to hate that." And so I sat them down and I taught them algebra. I just started. I said, "Okay, you got like three apples and one apple. What do you got? You got four apples." And then I started saying, "Okay, three." And then I drew an apple. And okay, what is that? You know. And then I started doing substitutions, and they loved it. They're like, "Give me another one. Give me another one."
Yeah.
We did it for like 45 minutes, and it doesn't matter whether they ever remembered it. They remembered that algebra was fun.
Yeah.
And I just wanted her to know that not just be declaring it, but she was like such a blonde. And no insult to all blondes, but you know, she was acting like the typical. Stereotype, you know,
and not just like physical stereotype,
Right. And so I felt it was like my mission was I had to make sure she didn't think that way, you know.
Well, I've always wondered why. I know some people actually have a problem, with numbers, and it's confusing to many people. But I've always wondered why it's numbers seems to be something that people just go, oh God, I'll never need
fractions.
This type thing.
I hate fractions. That's the classic, right? I love math.
See, to me, it's like it's problem solving, and you feel so good when you get it right.
Plus, you know when you get it right in math. You got English. How do you know if you got it right or not?
Which is why, to this day, I have the scary dreams where I've forgotten to go to math for a whole semester and I won't graduate. Because you cannot BS math. You can BS all sorts of things, but not math. If you don't know how to do it, then you won't be able to do it. So, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Well, let's shift gears now. Let's talk about a little more to the present. What's a day in the life of working at TWIT? What's it like?
TWIT is great.
I mean, that slave driver, Leo. I mean,
well, he's terrible.
Horrible man.
He's a horrible, horrible man. I've learned to look past it after a lot of meditation. TWIT is great. For anybody who doesn't know, I worked with Leo many years ago. We've always stayed in touch, even when we weren't working together on a daily basis. But I always knew that he was an extremely good mentor. Talk about a real geek at heart. Not only is he passionate about this stuff, but he's just really, really super smart. You know, there's like smart people, and then there's Leo people. You know, you don't encounter people like Leo all the time, so I knew that even after we had parted ways job-wise, that career-wise, I really wanted to be on the same path.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
And we've always kept in touch. So when TWIT first started, I was working at G4, which Tech TV morphed into down in Los Angeles.
By the way, I took my TiVo back to my cable box back to the company that I got it from and said, I'm giving you this back because you guys canceled Tech TV. Because I was just like, that's why I got it, was for Tech TV. I don't need this anymore.
Yeah.
I got it back later.
Well,
I was so pissed.
Well,
when
I mean, that's the thing about Tech TV was it was, and sometimes the people who worked there will kind of have a conversation like, what was so special about it? Because there are all sorts of jobs that people have that are great and rewarding. You make a lot of friends. And Tech TV was one of those places, but there was something else about it. And that had to do with the fact that we were all talking about this cool stuff that we liked.
Right.
We got to take apart computers and try to, you know, crash systems and learn things and talk to interesting people. But all of the people who watched the channel were really, really loyal.
Mm.
They weren't sort of like, I don't know, tech TV.
Yeah,
maybe I'll learn something once a week. They wanted to watch it all day.
Yeah.
They really wanted to watch us on a daily basis.
Right.
They were, and they were really bummed when it went away. It wasn't necessarily the biggest audience in the world. Of course it wasn't, or else it would still be, you know, a channel, cable network. But it was the right audience. So Leo finally was like, hold on a second. I don't need to wait for a cable company to try to put something like this together again. I realized that niche audience now has nothing to watch. So why not just build a network around fewer people overall that we can build out in smart ways and not try to appeal to mass market, you know, or get away from the message. We can have very specific shows for people who want to just talk about Windows. Let's do Windows for an hour.
Right.
Let's just talk about Mac. So that's how, obviously, Twit got started. And at a point, there was advertising revenue. Kids started coming in. And Leo had the opportunity to start hiring people. Because he can't do it all. And he needed support. And he turned to people that he had worked with in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us have worked with Leo in the past. Twit has other employees, too. But that's how it all started. So for me, a typical day is I live in San Francisco and Twit's in Petaluma. So I have my 45-minute commute each way, if I'm lucky. And I listen to a lot of audiobooks. I'm teaching myself French with this variety of French podcasts that I listen to. I keep myself occupied as much as I can.
Well, it's always good to keep Sarah occupied.
Right.
We've already learned that, if nothing else, today.
Right, yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, that's kind of, I get my head in the game before I go to work. And then 5 days a week, I shoot TNT. So before I even leave the house, I feel like I've read as many tech blogs as I could possibly cram into my head because we don't actually know until a couple hours before showtime.
You can't read it yesterday.
What makes the cut?
Sure.
So we read as much as possible, and then we all have a conversation of what stays, what goes, what's our top story, what stuff that we need to mention, but we don't necessarily have to have a conversation about it. So
are we going to let Tom and Iaz have a food fight this time or not? There's all those things.
Yeah, and we try to keep the conversation as organic as possible, but it's sometimes nice to know, you know, let's say on a, you know, some sort of like a hot button issue, an Android story, just for an example, I might say, listen, I think I'm going to have this sort of a, I'm going to come at it this way.
Sure.
And we'll all kind of go, cool, this sounds like a good conversation. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
And then we sort of let the conversation happen when we're finally on the air.
It's oddly organic and yet crisp at the same time. You know, you can get into this big rambling thing where you're arguing about something for a long time, but you guys don't. You lay it out here, they argue back, you argue, okay, done, move on to the next one. And it seems to stay tight. You know, it's got enough content, but it's not, so I don't ever feel like it got cut short. And yet it's crisp. I really like the show.
Thank you. We like it too.
It's my breakfast every day.
I'm glad. That's great.
Twit.
Yeah. So you watch
TNT
the morning after.
Yeah. And then
we've heard a lot of people do that, so that's why we try our best to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Even if you're watching live,
so yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We try. I do. I'm actually guilty of that a lot. We try to make sure that we say tomorrow, Thursday. So if you're watching Thursday, you're not going to miss something that you thought was happening on Friday.
Then I watch a little, just started doing some iPad today, mixed in with some social hour when I'm on the treadmill, that sort of thing, doing a little bit.
Oh,
I was a big All My Children fan for 30 years. And what was I going to do? My soap opera was gone. I filled it with you guys. So, hey.
I am honored. I was also an All My Children fan for many years.
Oh.
My mom and I would tape it during the day because neither of us would be home.
Yeah,
she was working. I was at school. And then that was our non-geeky time after my dad was like later.
I loved it because it was, as an engineer, you know, I had a real serious job and I had all these toys and people I worry about, all the stress and everything, and then I'd go turn into a vegetable for an hour at the gym. And people would try to get me to go to meetings at lunch. I'm like, well, no, I have to go to the gym.
I've got my stories.
Yeah, I've got my stories.
It's my routine. Well, you know, the iPad, this could apply to any tablet, but the iPad is the tablet that I have. Has made my gym time, my work time, because now I just go to work or I go to the gym and I load up all my tabs of all the news stories that I feel like I really need to
absorb. You've got to be cycling, not running, to be reading.
Not running. Okay. It's either elliptical or bike.
I can almost do elliptical, but I've got to make
the letters walk, stay up. But if I'm at the gym, I want to be like... most mornings, not every morning, but most mornings, that's what I'm doing first. I read while I'm exercising.
It makes the time go flying past.
And it's like... I know I'm not going to exercise when I get home, so perfect.
It's not going to happen.
I feel like I'm getting away with something.
You're just sneaking it in. Well, I definitely feel that way with working out at lunch, definitely. That's my time. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
That's what I do. Mm-hmm. I go to the gym.
No, it's good to have a routine.
So I told you we would keep it to 30 minutes. Any last thoughts on the future looks in technology? What's exciting to you? Or is it just like this pace is just going to keep going? This seems really fun.
Well, it does seem really fun. I wouldn't say I'm enjoying watching the crazy mobile shift right now. I mean, I am enjoying reporting on it. I'm not enjoying companies not doing well. But that's a fact of the matter, is that the landscape of mobile is like shifting. It's like tectonic plates where you're like, they're going too fast. Oh my gosh. New Canyon being made.
Four Android models came out while we were in here.
Seriously. And HTC canceled many of theirs. That part of technology is fascinating. I think that's a better way to put it. I'm really fascinated by how business models have to change really quickly, because the global marketplace, people's interests and habits certainly shift country to country.
Right.
And that's actually fascinating too, the way that people digest things differently. But so many emerging markets just hop, skipped, and jumped over so much of the computing age that some, a country like the U.S. enjoyed. So they're going straight to mobile and they're using things in different ways.
Skipping straight to it.
Yeah. And all of a sudden they're emerging markets and they've got disposable income, and look at China. And everybody's going, oh gosh, now we got to look at China. What's China doing?
China's big.
China's so important. They have so many people. They've got all this money. So it's going to be a really crazy 5 years.
Development and that rapid business model change, then you're RIM, and then that's fun to watch too. So
if you're a sadist, then it's really fun to watch the RIM. Well, hey, it's got a new CEO. Who knows what's going to go on?
It's sort of like they could just take a blind date at this point. Would be better than whatever they were going to do, the path they were on.
They are trying something different. Which, if I want to be an optimist about it, I say, hey, that's good.
Sure.
I don't know necessarily that it's going to be enough, but that it is. It is fascinating to watch. Yeah. I'm also, I'm really interested in. How to enjoy entertainment a variety of ways that do not involve cable companies, DirecTVs, things like that.
Sure.
I got rid of cable, I think it was about a year ago now.
Oh,
and wow. I knew I was watching a bunch of junk and I didn't really want to watch anymore. I certainly didn't want to pay for stuff that I wasn't watching.
Right.
But at the same time, there are so many ways to get content now. It's just messy. Right now it's messy.
Right.
It's like I got my
really
Roku,
hard
got my Apple TV, got my
got the Apple
OTA
TV, we got the
antenna.
Mac Mini, we got the PS3, we got the...
Right. And I really want a boxy box dongle, but I can't really justify
just
it right
too many
now.
Things.
So it's messy,
it's hard.
But it's doable. Like you can do it. You just, you got
luckily
some inputs.
You like programming the VCR, so...
Right. Yeah, it's fun.
It takes me 45 minutes to start a show, but
Right. Yeah, I enjoy all of that, but it would be nice to have one system to rule them all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not voting for one system to rule them all, but one day that would be nice. Or, just
something
figure out how they can talk to each other.
More seamless.
Yeah. Or,
I mean, if it's hard for you and me, that's a bad sign, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to figure it out. Wait, this input. Where's the sound coming out? It is messy.
I think what's hard is trying to figure out why the heck I pay for Hulu Plus. And then 30 Rock, I can only watch through Hulu on my laptop, even though I pay $8 a month. And that's one of my favorite shows. That is hard for me to process.
The older, 2 weeks
someone
ago
explain,
because
that is fuzzy math right there. That bothers me. So I'm looking forward to things like that being ironed out.
Smoothed
as
out.
Content creators realize people will pay, but don't be
stupid.
Don't be unreasonable
with
us.
Yeah, come on.
You know?
Come on. Play fair.
Yeah.
Play fair.
So I'm looking forward to seeing where that industry is going
to
go.
I love this because I can't see an end to how fun this is, you know, that things are just changing all the time and the technology from the computer side and the laptop side and the tablet side and the phones and whatever's going to come up next, you know. It just seems to just stay on this pace. And
right.
It's just really fun.
Yeah, I love it. I try my best to unplug regularly. Sometimes on the weekends I don't. I wouldn't say I'm not online because that's not true. I mean, I basically should have this glued
right
to
there.
Me.
Yeah, it's they got a little thing
right
that
in my
you
heart.
Can hook it to your
right
hand.
In my heart. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We're
that,
like
that
one.
Purple lady.
Us two.
I'm sure you saw her. She's got this thing.
Yeah, there are a few of them actually. Yeah, it's tight. But no, I wouldn't say that I'm not online, but I do my best to kind of.
Not stay as obsessed with it.
Yeah.
The weekend.
Well, just there. I have other interests,
sure,
and I think
sure.
that's really important. But it's really, really fun to be able to do this as a career because I know that I would be reading these stories and following these trends and tinkering with these toys.
To do it.
Absolutely. It is such a good position to be in. I'm really lucky.
I do have to tell you, I've resented you for years. I was at the Podcast Expo, and I got to talk to the great and powerful Leo Laporte.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when Leo focuses his energy on you, it's just like, it's a wonderful thing. And I'm talking to him, and all of a sudden he goes, Sarah! And he, like, practically dove off the stage to go talk to you, and I was just, like, kind of slunk away in the corner. Going, okay, I guess he's done
but
with
he
me.
Just,
he had not seen you in, like, a year or something like that, and you'd walked up to the stage.
But he does that all the time. It's his attention span. It's very bad.
He had no idea.
Like,
I had
he does that
there,
to me
right.
12 times a day.
Oh, okay, okay.
Where we just
right.
go,
well,
we were talking
stop.
Here.
Yeah. I think I'm past it now.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah.
It'll be okay.
Glad you've moved past it.
All right. Yeah. Very good. Well, any last words? Anything? We plugged pretty much everything, I
yeah,
think.
No.
iPad Today, Tech News Today,
The Social Hour
with Amber MacArthur. That's a great show. That's really, you've had some amazing interviews on that.
Thanks. Yeah. I love Amber. She is just smart and nice, and she's kind of the whole package. I really like working with her.
I ask her these questions too.
Oh, I think
where she grew up, how she became such a geek, because she's pretty too.
Yeah, she has a really interesting story. She's so self-made. She just kind of, she's sort of a no fear kind of a person. Not to like go crazy into Amber territory, but that's one of the things I like about her, is she sort of just does stuff. Like, oh, I think I'll start a production company. Oh, that's going pretty well. I think I'll start. She has ideas and then she executes.
Actually executes.
Yeah,
not just
instead
ideas.
Of being afraid.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that's what holds a lot of people back.
Yeah.
Certainly women.
Yeah, yeah.
But people in general. Last words. I we're cranking along at TWIT. Things are going really well. I have ideas for shows that I want to do. I'm not quite sure how many hours in the day I have to make them reality, but. Definitely in the next year, we hope to add a few more shows to our roster, cool. and I'll definitely be involved in some of that. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for being on the show, Sarah.
Thanks so
much
for having
me. I know it's a crazy day.
Yeah, but no, this is fun. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I bet you can tell that I had an absolute blast with Sarah. That was so much fun. She was so gracious. We had a great time. And by the way, if you go over and watch the video, that is not a giant cup she's drinking out of, or she's not a miniature person. She actually had put the cup really close to the camera, so it looks all foreshortened. Actually, it's a wide-angle lens, too. So the cup next to her looks like it's like, you know, three-quarters the size of your head. It's just kind of funny. Anyway, that's going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to Blue Mango Learning for helping us to pay the bills. So go ahead on over to bluemangolearning.com and check out Screen Steps and Clarify. And don't forget to tell them that Allison sent you. Also, don't forget to email me at allison@potfeed.com with your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions. I love to read what you guys send in. I also contribute a fair amount over on Google Plus nowadays, so just search for me by name if you want to circle me up. If you want to join in the fun of the live show, and I'm telling you, they've been having a blast tonight in spite of the fact that they're watching the Super Bowl and not listening to me, so you can head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic Nocilla Castaways. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.